Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another broadcast on the Soul of America Radio. Tonight, you're listening to Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness, with your host, J.R. Thicklin. Tonight's broadcast is brought to you by Blog Talk Radio, hosted and produced by the Soul of America Radio. Comments made on tonight's broadcast do not necessarily reflect the views of Blog Talk Radio, the Soul of America Radio, or its host. Hope and Healing takes you from a place of pain, abuse, violence, rejection, and abandonment to a place of hope, healing, and power. All aboard with your author, activist, advocate, and friend, man of purpose himself, and your host for the evening, Mr. J.R. Thicklin. Yeah!
A Journey to Wholeness. This is your host, J.R. Thicklin, and I'm so very glad that you've joined us here on the Soul of America Radio Network. Yes, a special edition tonight, a special edition show. We're here on Thursday night tonight, and for those of you that are longtime listeners, you are used to having us every Monday night, and we'll be back on this coming Monday night on August 24th. But tonight, we're on here with a very special show, and we're on tonight, and I'm broadcasting live tonight from San Diego, California. So we're here on the West Coast, and those that are joining us tonight, we're so thankful to have you join us tonight, and we're excited about the show that we have tonight. For many of you that are listening to Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness for the first time, I want to know that this show is designed with you in mind to address the issue of domestic and sexual violence, abuse, abandonment, rejection, loss, or whatever have impacted you that have made you hurt and that you need healing from. So this has been absolutely a tremendous time, and we are looking so forward to our show on tonight. Now, many of you that have been joining us over the last few weeks know that we've had some tremendous shows, and of course, tonight is no exception inside of what we're doing and the things that we're talking about. So I want to make sure that as we begin to talk about this even now, that we have an opportunity to really address some very serious issues that are happening in our society. For those of you that may be listening by way of internet, that's www.soulofamericaradio.com. That's www.soulofamericaradio.com. And you go right over there to Hope and Healing and go to live show and you tune in. For those of you that have chosen to join us tonight by way of telephone, that's area code 323-784-9638. Area code 323-784-9638. That is how you reach us, and that is how you join us. Now, if you decide that you will have a question or have a question or comment, you simply hit the number 1 on your keypad, and that allows our engineer to let us know that you want to come on the air. You don't have to give your name. You don't have to do any of that, but we'll get you on the air by signifying or by announcing your last 4 digits of your phone number tonight. So once again, we're glad that we're here tonight with Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness, the special Thursday evening edition. Once again, I'm coming to you live all the way from the great state of California. I am in San Diego, California here, and we're so glad to be with you on tonight. Now, one of the things I want to say on tonight that has been so important in the work that we're doing is because of the fact we continue to see things happen around our society. For those of you that, once again, that are joining us for the first time, I want you to know that we try to inform in every way that we can. Those of you that are following us on Facebook, you can find us on Facebook, our Facebook page, Domestic Violence, It Is Your Business. You can find us there. As well as we have another Facebook page that really speaks to the peace, the tranquility, the testimony, and the inspirational page. That is Destiny by Choice, Roman numeral 2, Fellowship. That is where you can find us doing some tremendous thing there. It is an open group, a drama-free social network group. that is filled with testimonials, praises to God, songs, inspiration. You can find it happening there. And then I want to also call your attention to Harlem World. Harlem World is a special event type of website and a Facebook page, I should say, and that is, of course, being designed and manned by none other than Indie Harlem 2. And I want to give a shout-out to Indie, who always makes this happen. I want to give a shout-out this afternoon to the president and CEO of the Soul of America Radio Network, Mr. Tony Stallings, as well. But listen, folks, I'm excited because we have a great show on tonight. And we have not only a great show, but I have a great guest and I have a great co-host. And so I'm going to get this going, and I want to welcome to the show right now our co-host tonight. This is my friend, my colleague, who have done work with me inside of domestic violence. She's doing work with me inside of the work with not only Destiny by Choice, but the African-American Domestic Peace Project of West Palm Beach. And so I want to welcome her this afternoon with me. Let's give a great Hope and Healing Soul of America Radio Network welcome to Dr. Annette Dudley. Come on, let's give it up.
Thank you so much.
Well, it's great to have you on, and we're in two different places this time, but nevertheless, I know that you're holding the fort down, and I'm so glad to have you to co-host this with me. Oftentimes, we do co-host the It Back radio broadcast there with the African-American Domestic Peace Project, but we get a chance to co-host tonight with the Hope and Healing during the wholeness broadcast tonight. And for those of you that don't know Dr. Dudley is a tremendous individual. She's a behavioral scientist. She has dealt with the issues of domestic violence and so many aspects of trauma and things for a number of years. And she's authored many things inside of contributing authors and writing to this issue. And Dr. Dudley and I have had the opportunity to work together, to do some training together, both inside of the faith community and other places, and we're excited about some things. And Dr. Dudley is with folks, and you're going to hear me call her Dr. D, because that's our short way of dealing with this. So it's Dr. D and Pastor T, and that's what we generally roll like that. But Dr. D, you know, when you contacted me the other week and we were talking about some things there and the whole situation that has happened around the country, a week ago we celebrated, if you would, at least commemorated the one-year anniversary of what happened in Ferguson. And we do know that even after those things happened, that one-year anniversary happened, we had some peaceful commemoration, then things got chaotic there for a second. And you were talking to me, and you mentioned to me about a very distinguished gentleman who has a life, a career in law enforcement, who's now retired. He's had an opportunity to be a part of some very interesting things himself. And so you reached out to him, and I'm so glad you did. And I want you to just have an opportunity to introduce our distinguished guest to our radio audience tonight.
Well, thank you so much, because it gives me great pleasure to be here tonight and to talk to people around the world about what's happening and how important it is that we have this open discussion. But as we were talking, as you know, Pastor T, we were talking about other broadcasts and talking about what's happening today and what could happen in the future if we don't help to educate and make people aware of what's going on. And I thought about someone who's been a great friend to me over the years, and I'm so happy to know him and his wife, his family. He has retired not long ago as the deputy chief of police in Prince George's County, Maryland. And then some people may say, well, where is that? Is that a small place? That's a big place. It's a big place.
Absolutely.
And it's a county suburb of Washington, D.C. So I'd like to introduce Chief Deputy Michael Blow. Mike has commanded more than 1,100 officers and other police officials, and he has actually has a, his strategies bringing a reduction of more than 40% in the crime rate. Mike has,
wow,
has worked he's been a strategic management in the patrol district commander. He's been commander of Office of Intelligence and Protective Services. He's also been a police academy instructor. Now, as you know, after retirement, it doesn't just stop there in the salary position. It continues, because you gave a key word when you were speaking of Chief Deputy Blow. You said life. You may have been a slip of the tongue, but it is a part of his whole life, his life after retirement as well. And some of the incidences that have been going on with the street violence, what we call in these crimes, especially the one that started in Sanford, Florida with Trayvon Martin. And that's when that Black Lives Matter piece became a part, when George Zimmerman encountered and fatally, you know, shot Trayvon Martin. And then we've seen so many other incidents. These incidents have been going on nationwide for years,
Absolutely.
But now we have a new generation that says that we're not going to let this happen or continue to happen. We're going to bring more sight to it. So but I was talking to Chief Flo about it, and he said, hey, he said, you know, he said, after retirement, you talk about retirement. He said, I can't. He said, currently, I'm actually working as consultant to the nation's police command in what's going on in these continuing uprisings in the Black community. He said, I'm actually talking with people in Baltimore, in Missouri. He said, in fact, with the church burnings and the church shootings that have been going on in South Carolina, he said, I'm working on projects and programs to talk to churches nationwide about their security measures, how to recognize those that are coming into the services that may not be there for the services that we project. So he said, I'm actually building security systems for the schools. Prince George's County, Maryland has accepted a high-esteem security system where it can be monitored throughout, and also to measure the performance of what's going on in our social justice system. And so he said, you know, he said, and I'm upset and I'm annoyed by folks saying that it's police brutality. He said, in some cases it is, but I can talk about why it may seem to be and why it may be. He said, and I'm upset and annoyed to see Black folks being discriminated as though they're the only ones with the issue. He said, because it works across the board. It's not just Black folks. It works across the board. It's intermingled. So with great pleasure, I like to bring on board for everyone to get to hear him speak as he's spoken to me, and that is Chief Deputy Retired Michael Blow.
Let's give him a hand. Come on, go over to America Radio. Welcome. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for that introduction, and I was hearing all those wonderful things. I was wondering who you were talking about. And I just really appreciate it, and I'm very excited to be here this evening, and just look forward to having a great evening of some very productive and candid dialogue and just kind of discussing the issues, because there are a lot of issues, and as Dr. Douglas said, there's so many opportunities out of the tragedies and other serious incidents that we've seen over the last couple of months and years for the entire community to engage and undertake some activities that will bring about some positive changes, not only in law enforcement, but in the greater community as well. So I think out of the tragedies that we've seen and some of the other incidents, I think this is also a great time for the entire community to engage and become involved in just making sure that as we move forward, things get a lot better.
Absolutely. You know, Chief, you've had a long, distinguished career inside of law enforcement. I mean, the fact that you were Deputy Chief there in Prince George's County, Maryland, which is, you know, there around the nation capital. And you've had an opportunity to deal with issues in that community. But a lot of those issues there that happened there was, you know, they rose to national level and attention. And you had an opportunity to be a part of that. And it is through, you know, and the things I've read about you and everything that you have always kind of been more or less a strategist in a sense of the fact that, and I heard it even with what you just said, that how we take tragedies and we learn from those tragedies and how do we do things to address those things that don't happen. And you've had an opportunity, I mean, you've experienced a lot over your the singer's career, and you have gone back to the drawing board each time, thinking about special training protocols and things like that to be able to strengthen community, strengthen law enforcement training, strengthen relationships, and inside of that. One of the noted things there, you were actually there in Prince George's County during the 90s when we dealt with the whole D.C. sniper incident and so many things that have happened since then. So my question to you is that, you know, over your distinguished career, you've seen, I mean, it from every facet. And my question is the fact, in what way do you feel that we have evolved as a society when it comes to addressing whether it's crime in the nature of what we saw with the D.C. sniper, a crime that we're seeing happen now where it's seen to be proliferation, at least if not a proliferation, definitely we're beginning to see a lot of different maladies that are addressing the people of color. We're seeing communities seemingly, under siege at times. And so my question is, in what way have you seen things change, and how would you say that we must go about in really taking some new innovative steps in addressing things?
Sure. Well, I think over the years, there is more of an accountability mechanism now, and as most agencies go about doing their business. I think that many years ago, decades ago, you didn't have the same level of information and expectations in terms of performance and responses and interaction that you do today. For example, many agencies, we'll just use the CompStat process, for example. That's a process, for your listeners that aren't aware, that's a process that many agencies have where either on a weekly or daily basis, commanders come in and they kind of talk about what those areas look like that they're responsible for. And it used to be that the main focus was on X's and O's, the term that I like to use, and that is, how many bad guys did you arrest? How many warrants did you serve? How many traffic stops were you a part of? And those types of things. Well, now the emphasis is on what type of engagement is going on in the community. How many young people have you engaged? Do you have an explorers post? What are your civic associations saying to you? What tell me about the informal leaders in your communities and those types of things. And so now the expectation is, if you're going to lead an agency, that you not only not have to be aware of the technical things an officer and an agency must do, such as, you know, narcotics and vice and those types of things that we see on television, but you have to know the pulse of the community. You have to be aware of, this section of my district is an area where we're dealing with some socioeconomic issues. This section of my district is more affluent, so they have the ability to do a few more things and engage in a few different areas that we can't do over on the west side of town. And you have to be able to not only know these things, but you have to be able to engage both groups of people and also be able to foster some cooperation across those groups of people in order to be successful at keeping that community safe. Because I think everyone realizes now that, as opposed to the 60s and the 70s, you cannot have a successful law enforcement agency without the partnerships of the various community components, whether it's the schools, the civic groups, the pastors, the business leaders. You have to absolutely engage every aspect of your community if you want to have a successful strategy to keep that community safe. And I think that's the one thing that has really resonated over the last 10 to 20 years. I mean, even when you look at Ferguson and other things, you notice after they've talked about this incident happened that has upset the community or that has upset the department and so forth, the second thing that trails very closely is the community is saying that either the agency has not been engaged or the agency has been engaged, but we need to do a better job. And so I'm glad to see that now that is the standard, that, you know, community engagement is not just a buzzword, but it is actually a business practice now. And I think that's the most exciting thing that I've seen in law enforcement, you know, toward the end of my career especially.
You mentioned a couple of key words there when you said that it's a lot of it regarding socioeconomic issues and how it can come forward. And Pastor T and I are dealing quite a bit with domestic violence, and we see it as one of the number one killers in this country. It affects not just men and women, but people of same gender as well as children. And as many of you listeners have heard me speak before, I'm very high up on what's happening to our children. And I'm looking at this whole situation. We've all been children at some point or another. We're adults now. But what happens with the street violence? And then, Chief Lowe, you said the partnership of the community component. So what's happening in the schools? What's happening in the home? And that domestic violence, how it penetrates and results into street violence, which causes the need to have the type of police patrols available, because what is happening in institutions before people become adults or as they're developing and growing is a result of what's happening in street violence. And then I also think about, it's not just the people who are committing the crime, but the officers themselves who are responsible for communicating and working in the community try to not have this as a result, but how it affects them personally. So when I counsel, I'm counseling not only the victims and the abusers, I'm also counseling the officials, the institutional officials such as police officers who have to come back and take it home with them. It just doesn't mean I'm going to stop this violence and I go home and have a good night's sleep. No, it doesn't end there. So I'm saying, like, for you, Pastor T, you look at it too, when we counsel, say, even our faith leaders, and our faith leaders here, they hear about how somebody's son has gone to jail for doing whatever. But where did that somebody's son come from? What type of home environment did he come from? There is not one person I can believe in this world that can say they have never encountered, either themselves or as a third party or knowing of someone that has been in this type of violent relationship in the home, and then how it affects people as they go about lives later.
Sure. Well, I'm sorry.
No, go right ahead.
Oh, well, you asked a very involved question, and you hit some really interesting points. And I'll just start with the domestic violence piece. As we all know, that the pathways into deviant behavior and gang behavior often comes from when you're lacking esteem, there are issues in the home, scholastic achievement. You know, it's just a laundry list of things that go on that sort of create the perfect storm for a young person or an adult to become involved in deviance. And so in domestic violence, I mean, that's just the perfect situation, especially if you are either a victim of it or you're seeing it day in and day out, for you to sort of become hardened to the realities of good behavior. So, for example, let's just go to the esteem issue. You know, we often associate domestic violence with, you know, mom beating dad, beating mom, or mom beating dad, or partner on partner. But one thing that you touched on, you also have situations where the dad is coming home or the mom is coming home, and they're beating the you-know-what out of the youngsters in the home. So, and it, often it's for things that are very minute. You know, why isn't dinner ready? Why is the back door open? Why didn't you feed the dog? And so when those folks that are the victims of that type of unacceptable behavior, when you start when that daily thing happens where, you know, every time there's a problem in the house, someone gets beat. So now you start to think, well, that is the way that I resolve conflicts. So when there is a conflict out in the street and someone disagrees with me, or I like the Baltimore Ravens and you like the Dallas Cowboys, because you don't agree with me, I'm going to beat the crap out of you. Or if you happen to bump into me in the store in the Kool-Aid aisle and you didn't say excuse me fast enough, then I'm going to pull out a gun and shoot you. And so you sort of become immune to the fact that there are other ways to deal with conflicts other than abusive language and abusive behavior. You know, and for example, I know the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, they did a study a while back. They were saying like 63% of the kids exposed to domestic violence have a sleep disorder. Well, guess what? If you're not sleeping at night, how are you going to perform in school? So now you've been up all night. You didn't get to bed until 5 o'clock in the morning because you were hiding from somebody that wanted to beat you, or you were hiding because dad just beat mom. You didn't want him to come in and beat you. You have to be on the bus stop at 6 o'clock in the morning. You have a test at 8 o'clock in the morning. And so that's a recipe for disaster. So now that young person is not achieving in school. He or she feels that he's not loved at home. Well, guess what? The Mike Blow gang, we're waiting right across the street. We say, hey, Annette, you're not loved. You're not appreciated at home, but we love you. We appreciate you. Why don't you come run with our gang? We'll protect you. Nobody else will beat on you. And we'll make sure that you do well in this particular neighborhood. And so now you have gravitated towards gang activity because of what's going on in the household. So domestic violence is clearly a gateway into some really nasty behavior. And how often have we witnessed on television where people have been arrested for certain heinous types of crime, and one of the key things that comes out was, I was abused in my home, or I witnessed my mother beaten, you know, day in and day out. So I thought that's the way you do things. So as I grew up, I didn't have any problems pulling out a gun and snatching an old lady's purse or something of that nature. So domestic violence is certainly something that needs to be addressed constantly. We need to make sure that there are plenty of opportunities for education, that there are plenty of resources available for people, families, individuals to be exposed to, and anything that can be done either by law enforcement or the various support groups or the various government agencies that can help reduce these issues needs to be done, because it's clearly a very dangerous situation. You also spoke about officers when they see things and taking it home. Well, I can tell you that is a definite phenomenon. I certainly saw a lot of things throughout my career, and sometimes I find myself thinking about those things or sharing those experiences with family members. And I know, Dr. Douglas, you and I have talked about a few things, and sometimes they stick in the back of your mind. And sometimes officers have a way of coping with those things, and sometimes the way they cope might not be appropriate to the outside world, but they don't necessarily understand. Sometimes those officers are not trying to be callous. They're really saying, you know what, this is more than I can deal with right now, and I need to just say something to sort of bring myself down so that I can, you know, I can keep that image up and I can hold it together until I can get somewhere to really decompress. You know, I've heard officers make comments at homicide scenes and other things that, you know, if they were overheard by the general public, they might be troubled by those comments. But you understand that guy or girl is really trying to cope with the fact that, wow, we've got 7 bodies in this room. 3 of these bodies are under 4 years of age, and that body over there looks just like my nephew. You know, that's
So what you're saying, that's a human element that is there, and that the incident of violence that they may see, whether a homicide, suicide, or whatever fatality is, that even those officers are impacted by that trauma. So that they are also impacted by it, although they have a job to do, it does not eliminate the human capacity of who they are. And oftentimes they're trying to perform that job up under those real-time experiences.
Certainly. And I can tell you, I've been on the scene of things and had officers literally standing there in tears. You know, they're trying to, you know, brace and project the image, but you can just see the tears sort of seeping down. And some of these scenes can be very, very, horrific, and they, you know, when you see things, especially when it involves young people, I can tell you there have been many times where I've come home and just, I said, I know it's 2:00 in the morning, told my wife, but I got to wake the girls up and just give them a hug, because they just need to know that they're loved and appreciated, and, you know, and that was my way of coping sometimes, depending on what I saw. So you're absolutely right, Dr. Douglas. It is a job that it can be very gratifying. It can be very rewarding. But at the same time, when you see human suffering and you have any type of love for mankind, which most public servants should have, you know, it does get to you. And anyone that says that it doesn't, that's probably somebody that doesn't need to be in the business.
Absolutely. Well, let me do this real quick because we're getting ready to go to commercial break. For those of you that are listening, you're listening to Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness. This is your host, J.R. Ficklin, and we're glad to have you join us tonight on this radio show. We have tonight with us our special guest host and our colleague, Dr. Nat Douglas, and our special guest tonight is former Deputy Chief Michael Blow, who has been sharing some insight with us. We've talked a little bit about the incidents there of not only crime, but things that are happening around our country. We're talking about even the different the wave of where we're going inside of law enforcement, but even more particularly, we talked about some of the things that we've seen happen in Ferguson and Baltimore and other things. But right now, we're talking about how that impact of even these ills, such as domestic violence, how those things are transferable, how those things are impacting us beyond just what we see. And I want you that are listening to that tonight, if you'd like to call in, have a question, area code 323-784-9638, area code 323-784-9638. That's how you reach us. If you have a question and a comment, just simply hit the number 1 on your keypad. That lets our producer know that you want to come on the air, and we'll get you on the air. And we're going to be right back after this commercial break. You listen to Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness. We'll be right back.
This is the soul of America Radio.
Thank you for listening to J.R. Ficklin, Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness. We feature every Monday night a show solely devoted to people that are going through abuse, some type of problem in your lives that you can't work out. We mainly focus on domestic violence, the cancer in our lives. Join J.R. Ficklin, your host, here every Monday night at 9:00 p.m. Eastern, 8:00 p.m. Central, right here on the Soul of America Radio. You can contact Jay every Monday night at 323-784-9638. Or you can listen to him online. Just follow at soulofamericaradio.com and look for live streams. And that way you can speak or listen, whichever your choice may be. Thank you for joining us tonight. You're listening to Hope and Healing, a journey to wholeness with your host, J.R. Thicklin, on the Soul of America Radio.
If you're listening via internet and you want to speak to the host, please dial 323-784-9638 and press 1 to be connected to the host. This is the Soul of America Radio.
Here's your host, J.R. Thicklin.
This is your host, J.R. Thicklin, and I'm so very glad that you've joined us here tonight right here on the Soul of America Radio Network from coast to coast. You can find us here normally every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, but tonight is a special edition of Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness. This Thursday night, we're here with a special edition. I'm broadcasting to you live all the way from San Diego, California, and so glad to be with you on today as we're talking about some very important issues here. For those of you that are listening on the line, you desire to have a question and a comment, please feel free to hit the number 1 on your keypad. Hit it. You don't have to give your name, but once you hit the number 1 and let our producer know that you want to come on the air and you have a question or comment, we'll get you there immediately. You have with us tonight, once again, our co-host, Dr. Annette Douglas, behavior sciences and colleague and friend of mine, which also have on the air tonight, you have retired deputy chief Michael Blow. And we were talking about some great things before we went on the commercial break, and I'd like to go back into it as we were talking about how transferable these issues are when it comes to issue of domestic violence and other tragedies that perhaps law enforcement deal with. And they actually see, if you would, a lot of times it's out of street violence and community violence that we see the correlation between the this as being the outpouring from what have oftentimes happened in the home. So I'm back with Chief Blow as well as Dr. Douglas. Continue.
Great. You know, I had a question. Well, actually, what I was thinking about was what happened in Texas a few days ago when that young man, they showed the video of the young man, he was trying to break into a car, and then the video caught him actually committing a crime, and then two police officers came on the scene. Now, one police officer tased him, and I guess he had a hard time getting the young man to come into control. The other police officer pulled his gun and actually shot several times in different parts of this young man's body. I mean, he just, you know, Deputy Chief Deputy, can you respond to that? What happened? Did he lose it? Did he lose his cool and he just shot that boy like that? Or was he well-trained? What was his element all about?
Well, you know, that was another very tragic situation, and I believe that officer has now been terminated by that department after the chief, you know, because he was a probationary officer. The chief was not, at least this is based on the available information that's being put in the press, the chief was not pleased with his decision-making. And, and clearly in that situation where you've got a crime in progress and you've got one officer that has assessed what's going on and has decided to use less lethal technology, and what that means is that is technology that is available that is designed to stop a person from doing something bad, but it normally should not create a permanent injury to that person if you deploy it. That's like your taser, your OC spray, and those types of things. The officer deployed the taser, and I can only assume that the other officer that fired thought that since this gentleman was struggling and was not really being impacted by the taser, he felt the need to deploy his firearm. And again, you know, this gets right back to training and perception and those types of things. You know, it's not uncommon. It's tragic, but it's not uncommon that you and I, for example, the three of us could be on the scene of a situation, and you and JR could assess it and determine, you know, this guy is not really a threat. This is just a guy blowing off steam, and we're just gonna let him blow off steam. Where my perception is, you know, oh my goodness, we gotta jump on him right now, put some cuffs on him, and get him right down to the station, and so forth. And so, you know, this just gets right back to a couple of things: the hiring process, looking for those character traits that are going to provide you an individual that has good decision-making skills. Once you get that person in the academy, the training should be designed, and I'm not saying that their training is not designed. I'm just saying ideally your training should be designed that as another tool to assess your potential to handle stress. And then, of course, once that individual has gone through all that training and assessment, the hope is that I've spent in excess of $30,000 or $40,000 training each officer in that class, that you're going to be able to make some good decisions. In this situation, the chief looked this situation over and decided this young man did not make a good decision. And I support that decision by the chief. I think that was a good decision to make. It's unfortunate that this type of deficiency, if you will, surfaced at the cost of a human life. But certainly they appear to be doing everything in their power, number one, to make sure that this doesn't happen again. And they certainly separated this young man from the agency. But at the end of the day, that certainly does not reduce the harm that this incident has done, you know, emotionally and socially. And so this certainly is a chief's nightmare, that when an officer goes out, that he or she has all the equipment they need, they have all the training that they need, and that they're going to be prepared. Now, certainly the training doesn't prepare you for every conceivable situation you're going to run into, but you should have enough training and enough common sense and enough confidence, if you will, that even those situations that are not on paper and you didn't cover in the academy, that you are able to come up with some good responses to have the appropriate end to that situation. So, again, just another very tragic situation, and it's a situation that is going to challenge the community's confidence. But I think that, you know, the chief taking swift action and also engaging the community, that should go a long way in terms of the long-term healing that's going to happen. And understand that when you have incidents of this magnitude, you don't have instant healing. It doesn't work like that. One of the things, I'm going to just jump back into Henderson real quick to make my point. I'm watching the CNN specials a couple of weeks ago, and it's, you know, the one-year anniversary. And it's almost like, okay, it's been a year. Everything should be good now. No, it takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of interaction, and it takes a real commitment on everyone's behalf when you have these situations to work through it, to make sure that you gather all of the facts of what occurred, not innuendos. You have facts. And that after the fact gathering has occurred and whatever court interaction that's going to occur, that there is some dialogue throughout the process with the community so that they understand this is what we're doing. We understand that this is an issue of concern to you and to the agency, and we are taking every appropriate step to, number one, deal with the issue, and to make sure that whatever we do in the future in terms of buying equipment, deploying equipment, training with certain types of equipment and other types of things, that this incident is the exception and not the norm.
You know, it's so obvious that many times, you know, the general public doesn't see what's happening behind the scene when it comes to situations like this that law enforcement are involved in. And that, you know, like many things, we all learn. We learn how to do a better job based upon a set of situations, circumstances that have happened. We look at how can we do a better job inside of one thing or another. And unfortunately, and, you know, and for those that may think that I'm being an apologist, I'm not being an apologist, I'm being a realist. In this case here, every profession makes adjustments. Every profession make adjustments when they get certain outcomes. And those outcomes actually inform us inside of making those adjustments, whether or not we need to do a better job of prevention, training, whether we need to do a better job of whatever. Do we need better equipment? Do we need more manpower? Whatever. And here's the thing about it. Law enforcement makes those adjustments. And oftentimes, and this happens so often because we will see a situation very similar to the young man there in Texas, and we see that situation happen. Now, all of our hearts go out to it. It's just that situation that goes on. And yet still, somehow or another, we forget about the elements that oftentimes may have informed the life of the individual who was obviously committing a crime. And Dr. Douglas, you said it earlier, that sometimes we act as if these individuals that commit crime, like they dropped in out, you know, out of a space, you know, out of a space museum somewhere. They came from out of space, and all of a sudden they're, you know, they're raising their, if you would, havoc on our communities. But the reality is that they are coming from our homes. They're coming from our communities. They're coming, and they're being impacted by their life situation. They're being impacted by whether there's a void there that have made them in many ways sense of hopeless or helpless, or whether or not they are being informed by the aggression and the activities that are going around them. And so I said that to say this is the fact that many times, Chief, when we talk about domestic violence, people really look at domestic violence in one particular lens. And oftentimes they don't see the far-reaching impact of domestic violence. I often say that domestic violence is never an isolated incident. Domestic violence affects generations. Domestic violence literally impacts generations. It's a learned behavior. And if that's never properly dealt with or addressed, it becomes a perpetuation of this type of behavior, and it can happen for many generations. When we see domestic violence fatalities, when we see it happen, whether it be homicide or suicide, literally those things impact generations. You know, the person is gone. You wiped out a whole generation. The voice of that individual is gone. There's a void there. Whether there's a mother that is gone, life is taken, a child now is left motherless, or whether there's, let's look at a different perspective because oftentimes we don't talk about this. Mm-hmm. The painful experience that perhaps a father may experience in his daughter being killed or severely injured due to domestic violence. But how much deeper does that pain go when that father himself, they've also been that same type of person in his relationship with his significant other?
You know, and that takes us right when we talked about Black Lives Matter. You know, and its effect with domestic violence and street violence. And I'm also a promoter of education. I think bringing awareness and education, Debbie Blow, Pastor T, we've all been involved with educating because we know that making others aware of where these items, these issues have come from and where they stimulate, what the root of them are, and then to build strategies to help correct them. And so I noticed that there's Dartmouth College recently started a course in their school. It's called 10 Weeks, 10 Professors. And each of the professors come from different areas, anthropology, sociology, social sciences, et cetera. And they speak on topics that include gender studies. They talk about what brings on, what can happen, what brings on Black lives, to say Black Lives Matter. They talk about national problems of inequality and race and violence, and they're building some history there, but they're teaching the students in the schools at that level so that they will understand that what their baggage they've carried over the years can result in good and not just first thought as violence. There's also the as you know, we talk to so many people about making a change. A change in behavior takes education, and it means educating others. Now, I remember that, Deputy Blow, you have been and still are an enforcement expert, and you've talked with and been expert to CNN, the Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer, and I think also CNN's 360 with Anderson Cooper. So I applaud you with that, because it takes folks like you to come up and say, hey, not only am I a person of color, I'm educated, I'm there, I'm right in the field, I'm right in the middle of it, and I can give you some pointers, I can work with you and help you to get out of it, I can work with you to help so that you don't get in it, you know, of these strange and reoccurring situations. Pastor T, you all over the country, you know, talking about domestic violence, bringing awareness and training for people who have never been, to understand how not to become an abuser or a victim. And I'm excited about that. I'm excited because years ago that wasn't available. It wasn't available. But then what does that mean? And I asked the listeners, what does it mean when it says Black Lives Matter? You know, what is that? You know, where did it come? We know where it came from, where it stimulated, but isn't everyone that? Doesn't this impact everyone? Isn't everyone's life a part of our lives matter? You know, so that's what I'm wondering.
You know, that's a great question. That is a great question when we say that, because, you know, it's become a national buzzword and phrase, Black Lives Matter. And on the surface, you know, we see what we think it means. You know, sure, it matters. But in what way does it matter? And does it matter beyond a T-shirt? Does it matter beyond us, you know, with T-shirt and paraphernalia? But does it matter enough for inside of our own personal responsibility, inside our own education, inside of the fact of us understanding the consequences of our actions, and whether those actions are the way that we raise our children or the way that we deal with one another, or whether those actions are our inactions, that which we fail to do. Because I do believe that oftentimes when we have failed to do certain things, we will see it. We will also see the impact of that. I often quote Frederick Douglass, who said that it's easier to raise strong children than it is to repair broken men. And so that points back to something that we have to all keep in mind, that when we begin to deal with missed assignments, what do I mean by missed assignments? Assignments where we did not invest into the fact of how we displayed ourselves around our children, how did we raise them, how did we teach them, did they see tolerance amongst us, did they see us as being people that were peacemakers, or did they actually see a chaotic lifestyle that was filled with not only trauma, but drama? And so all of those things matter when we start saying Black Lives Matter. Well, it does. But it also matters when we begin to live valued lived lives. And valued lived lives also mean that we have to look at the consequences of our actions or the consequences of our inactions.
Absolutely. You know, it almost reminds you of the Black History Month celebration when you look at the what you're seeing in the media in terms of what are the issues of the movement. And you have the month of February for Black History Month, when the history of Black people in America and in the world is greater than just the shortest month of the year. And so, again, when you're looking at what is it that is driving the movement, and of course it came out of the perceptions and, unfortunately, some of the realities of, you know, the way that people were interacting with law enforcement. But there are also so many other things that are impacting our community that, you know, that are not rising to the same level. For example, Dr. Douglas talked about domestic violence. Now, in Houston, the Jackson family just buried 8 people who were killed by the mother's former boyfriend. He killed 8 people in that family. And, you know, a horrible incident. You know, when you just look at, you know, just the things that are going on, and for example, in Chicago, you've had, you know, in the, up to, I guess, about a week ago, 259 people shot, okay? Mm. 223 of them were African-American. About 78, almost 80% of those folks were African-American that were shot by other African-Americans. If you look in D.C., I mean, in Baltimore, about a week ago, 201 murders, 97 murders in D.C., 36 murders in Prince George's County. So you're talking about, you know, nearly, you know, 630-some-odd people that have been killed by people of their own race. Now, all of these people in Baltimore and D.C. and Prince George's were not all African-American, but the majority of them were. And so that is a matter of great concern. That matters, too. When we look at the test scores from our kids are scoring 75% below the rest of the community on standardized tests. I mean, so if our kids are not achieving in school, how can they pass the very test that will allow them to become police officers and firefighters and serve the communities that they grew up in? And so there's so many issues that we really need to look at, and I know we're not going to solve them all in a day because they weren't all created in a day. But if we're going to really look at this and really look at opportunities to improve the entire community, we really have to look at these issues closely, and we need to hold, just like the movement is to hold law enforcement accountable, and I think every chief in the United States gets it and wants to be accountable, we have to hold others accountable outside of law enforcement. If there are members in our community who are bent on harming members in the community, they have to be held accountable. If there are things going on that are keeping our youngsters from achieving in school, they have to be held accountable. If there are people who are beating up members of their household and raping them and other types of horrible things, they must be held accountable. You can't just hold one segment of the population accountable and say that this is the root of all evil. That's just not the way it is. You know, it's bigger than that.
Chief, you're right. You said something that I thought was so important. And it goes back to the whole thing, you know, the whole movement, am I my brother's keeper? And of course, we know that's from a biblical scripture there. You know, am I my brother's keeper? But the reality is that the fact, as much as we talk about it takes a village to raise a child, and that's what's, you know, been our mantra, especially in the community of color, well, it also takes a village to save one. It takes that village, that collective village there, to be a part of this, to make this work. It takes that collective village, and part of the main focus of that collective village is accountability. You know, one thing I wanted to, we do have a caller, and I want to go ahead and get this caller on before we go to our next break. And so I want to take the caller, number ending in 0996, 0996. Good evening, caller. You're on the air with Hope and Healing, a journey to wholeness. Welcome.
Good evening, Pastor Thicklin. This is Dr. Sharon L. Ellis Davis. How are you?
I'm doing great. So glad to have you on our show tonight. Yes.
I am so full of questions for the chief, so I'll try to narrow down, I guess, what I'm trying to ask, especially in the in light of the what does Black Lives what is so important about the Black Lives Matter movement. And my question was, you know, I've heard since I've been listening since the beginning a very good social analysis of domestic violence and how it happens in the home and what that can do in terms of how we act out in our community. But what I haven't heard, and I've heard that, you know, that these things can impact. I didn't hear the socioeconomic issues that impact and how young people are living in trauma, you know, from lack of educational resources and from lack of substance in their community. I didn't hear that. But even more important than that, I wanted to ask the chief if there's a social history to African Americans or anybody for that matter in terms of how they're brought up and how that might impact how they act or how they become victims, then police officers, as I'm a retired one, didn't fall out of the sky either. They came with a history. They came with socioeconomic impacts. They came from abusive households. They came from houses that talked about race in negative ways. And so that can impact how officers act also. And so what I guess what I wanted to know in the midst of all of that from the chief is, do you believe that racism and acts like that and people who have been exposed to negative images of...
Certainly. You know, the one thing that no matter how high tech we get, you have a human element involved. And because all of us are human, we all have flaws of some type. And, you know, police officers are no different. Officers that have grown up in households where there is disrespect of the family, disrespect of women, disrespect of other races and cultures, certainly those types of attitudes will spill over. And that's why you heard me mention earlier about the background process. That's why it's so important that you have to be very careful on the front end of looking into the background very carefully of those who have the privilege of being able to become a police officer. And there are a battery of tests and other things that candidates go through that are supposed to weed those things out. And then if they don't catch those things, then there are other activities in the academy that are supposed to catch those things. But I'll be the first to tell you, the systems of hiring and training are not perfect, or we wouldn't be having these discussions. So you're absolutely right. There are elements in everyone's past that certainly influence how you interact with people. And that is one of the elements of human behavior that you try to weed out, you try to train it out, if you will, and you try to do a lot of things to make sure that whoever is an officer serving a particular community is a person that has the mindset, I'm here to serve this community. I don't care what you look like, how much you make, so forth and so on. My job is to serve you. And we all know that does not always happen. And so that is a continuing process of what is the best mechanism that we could put in place to root out those folks that are harboring attitudes and beliefs that have the potential to manifest themselves into behavior that is not only an embarrassment to that community, but also may create harm to a family or to another member of that department that's not repairable. So you're absolutely correct.
And so the Black Lives Matters movement understands that historical and social context that have given rise to black bodies being harmed. Mm-hmm. And there is a perception, whether it's true, real, or imagined, that the policing is part of that, that don't value black lives because of mass incarceration, the disproportionate number of African Americans. And so that's where the Black Lives Matter, because historically it has not mattered. Slavery proves that, Jim Crow proved that. And so when we say all lives matter, if all lives matter, these things that are happening to black and brown people wouldn't be happening. And so specifically, yes, all lives matter, but we want black people's lives to matter also. And the way I explain it to people is domestic violence. When I teach domestic violence in seminary, someone is always willing to say to me, yes, but men get battered also. And I say, yes, and also men have breast cancer, but they're not the face of breast cancer. There's a social and historical context to violence against women, and we need to address that and not ignore that when we're coming up with solutions to ending violence. And that's how I feel about all of this, that we have to find solutions that connect also to the social and historical context that have given rise to some of this behavior.
And you're absolutely right, Doc, and I equate what you're saying. You're absolutely right. And I equate what you're saying to you're being treated, you're constantly getting antibiotics for some type of infection, but in the meantime, you're ignoring all the other things that can lead up to you being sick. You're not eating properly. You're not resting properly. And I guess that's the point that I'm trying to say. Certainly, there is no question that there has been an historical basis for those feelings in terms of how people of color are being treated or have been treated in the past and some of the incidents that we've seen on television and so forth. In light of that, also, there are some other issues that are equally as serious and equally as damaging to our ability to have futures for our community. And I think that this is the perfect example of we have got to be able to multitask and effectively address the issues that are impacting our community. There's absolutely no excuse for poor police service. I'm not even going to try to make any excuses because there is no excuse. And there's also no excuse. You know, there's this one thing that just is troubling me right now. In Washington, D.C., and you may have heard this, a 17-year-old got into an argument with a 12-year-old, came back and shot the 12-year-old and killed his mother. There is no excuse for that. We can't ignore that. There is absolutely no excuse for that type of behavior. And just like when we saw the incident in South Carolina when the officer shot that man in the back, that was totally unacceptable, and that was horrible. And this, too, is another example of something that should have never happened and should outrage all of us. Are you kidding me? We're in an age now where a 17-year-old couldn't get along with a 12-year-old, shot him and killed his mother. That is just horrible. And so,
and you know what's going to happen to them, Chief? They're going to go to jail. But when there's the issue with police, that doesn't necessarily happen. And they have been sworn to protect. And that's the difference in the conversation.
Well, but ma'am, the thing I'm saying to you is that we can't separate things that are impacting our community as one is more important than the other. They're all very critical.
Oh, no, you cannot. Absolutely.
And like I said, there is absolutely no excuse for a person that has the privilege of serving our community abusing that authority. That person should be under the jail, locked up, and never be allowed to interact with society. Because you violated a whole lot of things, not just the law, but you have violated the trust of the community.
A sacred trust.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Dr. Ellis was so on point in bringing that together. She was so on point because she's right. And we're not saying that black lives are more important than other lives. We're just saying that it has come from a long ways. It's a history of it. It's a history of it. And we really need to remain in active solidarity with all the oppressed people who are fighting for liberation and fighting for change.
Very much so. And we're going to take a break here in a second, but I want to just comment on that. I mean, definitely, Dr. Ellis, another one of our colleagues here, she brought forth a real good point, and it brings us to the question when we're saying, do we really know what that means? Because for some, it's the wearing of the T-shirt. For some, it is the outrage about what has happened and what has happened over a period of time, and definitely seem like the proliferation of this is continuing to increase in the most recent years. But when we understand the fact that we're dealing with some elements today that is seemingly boiling over more, but some of these elements have existed for such a long time, and therefore, because of that, you know, there are these movements that are happening. But we have to understand the context, the historical context of it, the social context of it, being able to connect those dots. Because I think when we connect those dots in that way, it will inform the way that we address it. It will inform our reaction. Because just as important, we know that evil prevails when good men and women remain silent. But we also know that ignorance also contributes to chaos and confusion, even when it's well-intended. So we have to be very careful about that as well. And I think that's been a very powerful dialogue. But we're going to take another break. What a powerful time that we're having here tonight. And after we take this break here, we definitely invite you to call. Those of you that are waiting on the line and you have a question or comment for our guests or desire to share anything, you can just hit the number 1 on your keypad. Those of you that may be listening by way of the Internet, feel free even now to join us by calling in, area code 323-784-9638, area code 323-784-9638. You're listening to Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness, and we'll be right back after.
Listening via internet, you're probably seeing a series of advertisements. Please click on those advertisements as they help us to continue to bring you the best in soulful talk radio. Destiny by Choice to Fellowship on Facebook is a spiritual, drama-free, judgment-free fellowship forum for light minds to share in encouragement through testimonies, scriptures, music, prayer, worship, and fellowship. It is our desire to be an oasis of hope in the midst of the deserts and wilderness of life's most challenging experiences. We welcome you for prayer requests as well as your testimonies as we collectively operate as thermostats, changing life's experience through God's leading in His Word. Join us as we empower lives and shape destinies. That's Destiny by Choice 2 Fellowship on Facebook. Through a search, you can find us.
If you're listening via internet and you want to speak to the host, please dial 323-784-9638. And press 1 to be connected to the host. This is the Soul of America Radio.
I am Indy Harlem II, and I am fighting the power on the Soul of America Radio.
Worldwide. Coast to Coast Talk Radio. This is the Soul of America Radio. You're listening to Soar.
And now back to Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness with your host, J.R. Thickland.
Welcome back to Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness. This is J.R. Thickland, and we're so glad that you're joining us here tonight on the Soul of America Radio Network, this special edition of Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness on this Thursday night. We've had very interesting dialogue here tonight with our very special guest, co-host tonight, Dr. Annette Douglas, a behavior science colleague and friend, have done work inside of domestic violence and a myriad of things for a number of years, as well as our special guest here tonight, former Deputy Chief Chief Michael Blow, there of Prince George's County. He's retired chief now, and we've had some very great interaction. Thanks so much for our colleague, Dr. Sharon Ellis Davis. She has done some tremendous work. She's authored quite a few things herself, both a retired police officer as well as have done the work inside of domestic violence for a number of years, and teaching seminary, and co-written some things, and she's going to be our guest here real soon on the show. I want to get back to our conversation, but I'll tell you, our boards are lit up, and we have callers that are waiting to come on the air, and so I'm going to get a caller number ending in 6267, caller number ending in 6267. Welcome to Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness. You're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to ask about how much does the media play into, I mean, I know that Michael Blow had mentioned the two teenagers in Washington, D.C., and everything that we hear is negative about, you know, not only people of color, but about the younger generation. And there's not a lot of publicity made about the positive things that are actually going on in our community. I think media drives a lot of what happens.
Chief? Okay, We'll make sure I get Chief back on the airway there. Make sure he's there with us. Let me make sure Chief is there, our engineer. Okay.
Hello?
All right. Okay, Chief, go ahead.
Hear me?
You're on the air now. Yes,
okay,
go right ahead.
Very good. Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. I think that that's been a conversation that many chiefs in the area, I'm talking all over the country, have in terms of there are a lot of good things going on in the communities, a lot of good interaction. And when you invite, sometimes you invite the media to come to these things, it's like, yeah, we appreciate it. We might get a camera by. But when a body drops on the street, you can't even walk to the scene. There are trucks and satellite dishes everywhere. So absolutely, there are a lot of good things going on that certainly don't get the same level of publicity, because as I've been explained, as I've gotten the explanation from my friends in the media, unfortunately that stuff doesn't sell newspapers and doesn't make ratings all the time. And again, that's why fortunately now with social media and other things, some of the good things that are going on are able to get out on YouTube and Twitter and out in the technical universe, as opposed to waiting on CBS or ABC to put it on the air or put it on the 7 o'clock news, along with some of the other important world news, if you will, that's going on.
You know, you're exactly right. Go right ahead. Mm-hmm.
No, I'm sorry. But as far as for the doctor that's on the air as well, you know, when it comes to behaviors, I just think that as a community, we do not, especially as a Black community, we do not do enough to force more of that positive image in the media, because we also project a lot of the negative things as well. And there's a lot of campaigns, a lot of things that are put behind, the money is being put behind more of the negative things than it is the positive. And that drives behavior as well as hatred towards, you know, authority.
Well, absolutely. I think that might have been addressed towards you, Dr. Douglas, inside of that. And definitely, I'll let you comment on that before I interact there inside of it. Hold it. I think Dr. Douglas, are you there? Go right ahead, Doc.
Yes. Can everyone hear me? I don't know if
yes.
I pushed you wrong. Okay, I'm sorry. But yes, especially when you speak about the media, I've noticed that we don't see it in the major newspapers. We don't see it on the TV news when we talk about domestic violence until we get into Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And that's so unfortunate. No, and we're leading up to that now. So I would say near the third week of September and leading into about the first week of November, because that month is October, the media is going to have it spread all over the place. It's people will be talking about it and interjecting at that point. And it's like Chief Deputy Blow said, it's not just 1 month of Black history, okay? It's not just 1 month for domestic violence. And we challenge, Pastor T and I challenge the media often about speaking on it constantly and continually. The Department of Justice is now recognizing quite a bit with the Office of Violence Against Women, and they're putting forward money to challenge the media to bring the information out. In some stations like MNBC and Fox and CNN, now they're bringing more of the social media into what's going on and talking about domestic violence. And just as much as we said, that's why I said Black Lives Matter and how does it interface with domestic violence. And yes, you're right about that. And more that takes for us is word of mouth to be our own media, to be our own, to speak up. We speak up at school, at work, in church, you know, among our friends, sitting there having a good game of Big Whiff. Talk about it and talk about making a change and what each person intends to do about it.
You know, I'd like to chime in on this just a little bit. And we have about 10 minutes left in the show, and I definitely want to get the president of Solo America Radio on in just a second. and I'm going to get Tony on in just a second, but I want to also, as I heard our caller say there, one of the problems is, and I think you were right on it, she said that we as black people have to also hold one another accountable for the images that are also put out there. And what do I mean by that? When we are seeing networks that are totally leaning toward reality, what we call reality TV, it sends a very conflicting message. When we see people that's supposed to be affluent black people acting like what we've always considered substandard behavior, it sends the wrong message. And I don't want to call out a show, but I have to, whether we're talking about Married to Medicine, whether we're talking about Real Housewives of Atlanta, or we're talking about that. And I think when we see those type things that are put out there, and we're supposed to be talking about people that are, you know, that really supposed to have a standard, it sends a very confusing message. Because what it actually says is that no matter where you achieve, no matter how much you achieve, fame, wealth, or education, or whatever, we still act a fool. And I don't think that is really that's not really a true representation of the masses of us, but yet it's still when we see those type messages perpetuated on television and they become part of, you know, driving ratings. And driving ratings, you see that almost every other month there's another reality show that is at least being given a shot. And most of the times, it does not speak anything to positive advancement, empowerment, you know, economic empowerment in any way. It generally speaks to us as negative behavior, buffoonery, or greed, or whatever it takes to cause self-destruction. And so I so agree with the caller. We've got to do a whole lot more to change that. And that's what we're trying to do, even inside of this show. And having said that, I definitely want to bring on, because I see you there, the president of Soul of America Radio, Mr. Solomon, you're on the air. Talk to us.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Hey, Mr. Solomon.
Hey, y'all. Wonderful show up. Wonderful show, man. I'm learning a lot. I'm in and out. I'm at another function, but I hope what I have to say hasn't already been said. If it is, I'm being redundant. But and Jay, this is a great show, and I love your guests. I'm learning a lot. I don't know if anybody has injected this or not, but we talked about this on one of my shows as well, and I think both of you are starting to hit home with it when you said it, and you might have already made my point. I've noticed that the media tends to love to show, and I'm speaking now of the police and the Black Lives Matter. They love to show this angry black young man or female talking back to the police. And as you know, Jay, I was a police officer in Birmingham, in the city of Birmingham, for a number of years. I was a police officer. And I just wanted to admonish us as responsible adults, not only to look for the police to make a change in the community, but we ourselves need to start educating our young people. And I started with my boys, telling them how to act when the police pull you over. We need to stress to them, you cannot talk back to a police officer. I mean, good reason. In other words, you follow the protocol. You follow his commands. Then you go. And if you have a problem with the way he's handled you, you go to his supervisor. I had that happen to me. I was sitting in the back of a well-known Starbucks drinking some coffee, and a young guy walked up with a police officer and said, that's the car. And I looked and I said, well, what's going on? He said, well, it was a car that was in this neighborhood last night that, you know, had a burglary, and your car was in the lot. Somebody said a vehicle fitting your car was in the lot. Well, I got a little upset at that because I'm not a thief. I'm not perfect, but I'm not a thief. And so I made the mistake of saying, well, you're probably just saying this because of my color, because I was in a predominantly white area. And the cop got right up in my face. The police officer put his finger almost on my nose and said some things I didn't like. And I then knew what he wanted me to do. He wanted me to become combative, argumentative. I backed all the way down. I respected him. I got his information, and I went to his superiors. My point is, I really think we need to educate the youth on how to deal with police officers.
Okay. Okay. Absolutely. And I think that ties right into what we're talking about. Once again, how do we handle conflict? You know, how do we handle conflict? And we're taught that from what we see. what we see at home. And so what we have to understand that the next step after conflict is not always violence. It ought to be resolution. How do we resolve it? And that's what we have to get to. And that can only happen when it is taught, when we ourselves display a degree of control and temperance, and when we not only display it, but we actually demand it as well.
And like you said, starting at home, starting from the time they're born, saying to that child, which I've said to all of mine, you are not in control. You do not have authority. You do not have that type of power. But until you learn that you will always respect that power so that you can gain that power and become the adult with the control, you don't face the officer in any kind of manner except respect.
Well, you know, it's beginning to be something that's a life-changing thing now. In other words, we're losing lives, not just youth, but, I mean, we're losing lives now. When I was growing up, it was a little different. But now I can understand it from the police officer's perspective at times. But we definitely have to train our youth, like you said, ma'am, to respect the authority. They have to respect the authority. In the 60s, I grew up in Selma. The beatings that took place on camera at the bridge meant something to the world because those were peaceful demonstrations. And when the world saw people beating children and chasing them by horses back to the church, it tore into their hearts. And it's a little harder these days watching CNN, watching these. And they love to show that, you know, the riots and the arguing. They love to show that. And that was my comment. I'm going to hang up and listen. I'm at another function, but great show. Thank you for letting me have an input, Jay.
Also, if I could add one comment to that, you guys have hit on some incredible points. Number one, just about teaching how to interact with the police and things starting in the home. And those are all very critical things. And the other thing I would add, just for the sake of time, is that I think that the community needs to remember that this is your police department. Your tax dollars buy all the fancy cars, all the shiny badges, all the neat stuff. And so what I would encourage people to do is to not wait. For example, in Ferguson, there's a new acting chief there. That guy is not going to be able to make changes by himself. And I didn't mean to call him that guy, but the chief is not going to be able to make changes by himself. And what I would encourage the community to do is to not wait for an invitation, but to become engaged in that police department, whatever that looks like, whether it's participating in ride-alongs, find out when is the next civic associated meeting, if they don't have one, to start one, taking the bull by the horn and engaging your police department. Because at the end of the day, it's the citizens' tax dollars that fund the police department. And I think one of the reasons that there is a perception and some of the things historically have occurred is because you don't want to leave the impression that the community is not paying attention or they're not engaged or both in the schools, in the police, and other vital services that result in a vibrant community. And so I would just encourage everyone, if you're not engaged, to take a moment, even if you don't do anything, but do a ride-along with your police officers. You can get to meet some police officers, actually see some of the things that go on. Many agencies have citizen police academies that you can join. Many agencies have civic groups that advise the chief and the district commanders and all those other things. And there's just a host of opportunities out there that I think that we should really participate in that I think would give everyone a different understanding or a better understanding of what law enforcement is and what it does. But the reverse thing is that it also puts a face of the community to the officers that are serving every day, because some agencies are very busy. They handle 300 or 400 calls a shift, and so they don't necessarily get the opportunity to stop and say hi and find out that you have the same interest. You may even attend the same church. And so I just think we should never miss the opportunity to grab that low-hanging fruit as we look to make things better or maintain things in our communities.
Absolutely. Well, with that being said, believe it or not, we're actually out. hard to believe here. Matter of fact, for those of you that are listening by way of the internet, in about 10 seconds, we're going to be disconnected. But we're at the end of the show, and I tell you, there's so much that have been learned today and so much that has been discussed. And I would like to not only thank our very special guest, Chief Michael Blow, and our special guest co-host, Dr. Douglas. And I hope that we can look at doing this again real soon. I would like to call it part two. Wow, we covered a lot of things there. We've had great callers, and we've had full bores the entire time. And hopefully we can get back together and do it again. We're over our time even now, but I'd like to give an opportunity for closing remarks from both of you.
Go ahead, Dr. Douglas.
Okay, I just wanted to say really quick that we're going to be together again. And don't forget, because we're going to talk about domestic violence and how the sniper, his whole incident bringing the crime around the country was resulting from domestic violence with he and his wife, Mildred Muhammad. So we're going to have special guest Mildred Muhammad and Chief Blow again. Pastor Thickman, don't forget, we're going to be back on the air talking about this continuing saga.
And I believe that date is October 5th, is it? I'm not sure.
8th.
Off the top of my head.
October 8th.
October 8th. Well, we'll make you definitely aware of that. That will be on the Hit Back Blog Talk Radio Network, and we'll make sure that we get that out to all of our listeners here on SOAR. Chief, closing comments.
Oh, well, it's been an absolute pleasure. And I said in the beginning, I just hope that the incidents that have happened are actually out of the tragedies that have occurred, that this is the beginning of some incredible opportunities for the community to sort of engage in various activities that are going on, and just really work hard at making things better, because I think that that absolutely can occur. We have some incredible folks all over the country, and I don't see any reason why we can't, over time, just really make things a lot better for everyone.
Thanks so very much. Very powerful, very informative. My pleasure. I'm looking forward to having you back again. For all of you that are listening tonight, those of you that have joined us on the special Thursday edition of Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness, thank you for you tuning in. And definitely the boards have been full, and your participation has been greatly appreciated. And this very powerful information that you've heard. And I want you to join us on our regular scheduled night, Monday night. It'll be Monday night, August 24th. We will be coming to you live then, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 8 o'clock Central Time, 6 o'clock in the Pacific Time Zone, and wherever you may be around the country. Join us for Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness. And please be safe and remember, there is no excuse for domestic violence. And until next time, this is your host, J.R. Ficklin, saying have a great evening. God bless.